Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And for those that may not be familiar, SDHAM is the morning show that's attached to the Soccer Down Here Network on SDH Monday through Friday, 9.05 a.m. Eastern Time on SDH social media, YouTube, X, Twitch for starters, and then turn it around and it goes, say, 2 hours, 2 hours-ish, usually around 11.05, 11.15, somewhere there in between. That's when the show ends, but it's Monday through Friday, 2 hours worth of stories and pundits and headlines and getting you up to date with everything that you might have missed in the overnight, getting you ready for everything that's going to happen during the day. And it's an opportunity for us to start our day with you and for you to start your week with us. This week on the Best of SDHAM, we cover a bunch of different topics on a bunch of different levels. First and foremost, it is an opportunity to get opposition research and find out when Atlanta United goes down to Central Florida and they stay in Central Florida, why, and what to look at in two separate competitions in a four-day period against the Purple Team, Orlando City. Our friend Mike Gramajo from West TV in Orlando is our opposition research expert when it comes to the Purple Team. He comes and visits and lets us know what's going on with one of the more confusing teams right now in the Eastern Conference. Then, to visit to Athens and find out what's going on with UGA Soccer, their head coach Kadani McAlpine comes and joins us because there's a very cool moment that's going to be happening in August between the hedges, not at the Turner Soccer Complex. It's going to be a moment where UGA Soccer tries to set a record for attendance, and they take on James Madison at Sanford Stadium. So we get all the intel and the thoughts behind that and where things go from here as UGA Soccer will have soccer in Sanford on Dooley Field August the 20th and looking for records and looking for a victory against James Madison. Then the third story is a really cool story that we got to find out about a lot involving the Field of Dreams Academy. Founder, Executive Director, CEO Terry Johnson came and joined us on the morning show, and we found out what is next up for Field of Dreams Academy in their 20-plus year history after receiving a grant from FIFA. And so it was really interesting to find out about Field of Dreams Academy, first and foremost, and then to find out how this grant is going to help out the Field of Dreams Academy at Field of Dreams INC on social media, and where they go from here. So very, very cool. The FIFA Global Citizen Education Fund is helping out the Field of Dreams Academy. And so it's a chance to catch up with Terry Johnson and find out how it impacts them and what they've done to impact a lot of other folks so far. So without further ado, time to catch up and get our opposition research. Two matches, 4 days, two competitions, Atlanta United, Purple Team, and it's our friend from West TV in Orlando, Mike Gramajo, with a preview. All right, Mike, my first question for you is, what in the wide world of sports happened Wednesday night?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And I think that was a question my sports director at the Western newsroom, Darren Stoltz, was kind of yelling across the newsroom when the game was happening. But it's really been the story of or the tale of the tape for the team. They defensively, they haven't been very solid. You can kind of just look at how the last few games have gone for them. Maybe you can go back to the Miami game. I mean, it was a great comeback win. I think MLS called it the greatest comeback in MLS history. But let's look at how the team was defensively. They conceded, was it 3 goals in that game to win 4-3? But then you look at what happened last week in Montreal. They made it to the 90th minute, came very close to getting their first shutout of the season. And then Montreal scores two goals, but it was a lack of just those defensive lapses that really hurt the team in that game. And then you look at this game against the Philadelphia Union, which think about it. They are the worst team in the league right now. Mm-hmm. To really go and score three against you. And Orlando was leading 2-0 at one point, mind you. So they were in a position where they could have just scored one more or at least managed the game and just liquidate the game and all. But, you know, Philadelphia found its way to kind of crawl back into the game. Team was able to win at the end of the day, but still a very, very common defensive lapse that we've seen from this team. Offensively, yes, they've been somewhat consistent, but – you know, a win is a win. I guess you can kind of say that at least that's what the interim coach was able to take away from this. But definitely a lot more problems that need solving on that side of the field when it comes to how this Orlando team has been looking like this season.
I was going to ask, I mean, just to break it down for folks, Ojeda 19th from the spot, Griffin Dorsey from the 27th. You mentioned that 2-0 lead. And you're thinking, okay, yeah, everything's cool. 2-0 at the break. We're kind of in control here. And then the game just goes, you know, absolutely amusement park on you. Olasky scores in the 54th. Then you get McGuire scoring in the 72nd to get the lead back to two. Then Kevin Sullivan, then Ben Bender, two goals in 4 minutes. And so I think that you're looking at it from a couple of different perspectives. You mentioned the defensive lapses. And I guess you can take it from the perspective of, okay, there was the defensive lapse in general. And then there was giving up two goals in 4 minutes to get you back to where you were at three before Ojeda scores in the 90th. So there are different stretches and different personalities to the defensive lapses, if you know what I mean.
That's a good point, because you look at when we look at these defensive lapses and how the short amount of time that these are occurring. I mean, it's the common theme that happened in Montreal. You know, Montreal scores two goals in stoppage time. I believe that there was only 6 minutes of stoppage time in that game, and they're able to liquidate and win that game against Orlando. Granted, against this Philadelphia team, those two goals did not come at the worst time, because obviously no one wants to get, you know, concede in stoppage time. Now you're scrambling last minute, last second to try to get a result. Thankfully, that wasn't the case for Orlando, but it is an area of concern, I would think, because, you know, to have it back to back games against Montreal last weekend, to concede twice in such a short amount of time, and then concede twice in what, 4 minutes against Philadelphia, yeah, I think that's going to be a little bit of the concentration when it comes to how do we approach and manage the game effectively. Because think about it. We're talking about some, in paper, some really bad teams right now. Montreal hasn't had a good season. Philadelphia, Supporters Shield winners last year, is not having a good season. Orlando's not having a good season. But if Orlando City's looking to obviously turn the paper around once Antoine Griezmann gets here in the summer, you're going to have to figure out how to manage the game more properly. Because, listen, Antoine Griezmann is not going to be your sole answer to really solving all your problems. You know, you're not going to have four Antoine Griezmanns in the back line and see if you can solve these defensive lapses. There's going to have to be a serious concentration when it comes to that. And maybe that can be the problem, but obviously you're going to have to hit on all cylinders. You know, the fact that the team didn't score on the road last weekend is an area not solely so much of concern. Obviously, defensive lapses is was really hurting the team, but you know, we have yet to see a consistent Orlando City performance at all this season. And I mean, yeah, you can kind of blame, you know, the coaching change that happened early in the season. You can blame that the team is very young still in that regard, injuries as well that also kind of affected the team. But with what now, three games left in all competitions for Orlando before the World Cup break, I'm pretty sure that's going to be something that's going to be pointed at or addressed at some point during the summer, during that league pause, because obviously the most important thing for Orlando is once they come back from that World Cup break is, can they turn the page and can they really kind of just do a complete 180 considering how the first half of the season has gone for them.
Well, and what is the current vibe involving Martin Perelman? Yet we know he's a caretaker manager. But when you have the interactions that you have, whether it's with fellow media in Middle Florida, Central Florida, or with fans or anything like that, is there a level of patience? Is there understanding? Do they get context? Do they sit there and go, okay, we know we got a lot of stuff to work on. We know that Griezmann is on his way. Yeah. I'm hoping they don't think he's the answer, but what's the current vibe?
Yeah, I mean, fans are fans. Fans are always going to be fans. You lose like the way you lose in Montreal. Fans are on social media are with the pitchforks and demanding, let's get a head coach, full-time head coach already. The vibe I get from the training grounds, it's really positive. I was there on Tuesday. We spoke with Duncan McGuire, and I don't know if it was me or someone else in the media landscape in Orlando asked them, you know, everyone looks like they're upbeat despite, you know, not having the greatest season in such a long time. Obviously the coaching change, the inconsistent performances, results that's come their way. And Duncan said, really, there hasn't been that much of a vibe change at all. I think there has to be, you have to include a little bit of the context when it comes to Martin Perelman. Martin has been with the team now for 4 years or so. He's been with the first, he's been with the organization, because mind you, you know, a little refresher for the viewers. He came in as the Orlando City B head coach 2 years ago, or 4 years ago. I stand corrected there. So he was managing the MLS Next Pro team. He did it for 2 years. And then after that, he was bumped up to the first team coaching staff, where he was Oscar Pareja's first team assistant coach since 2024. So he to kind of point out that maybe Martin doesn't have the locker room, or Martin doesn't understand the players, I think that you can kind of discard that theory, because Martin knows this team. He knows these players. Now, does that justify him staying because the results haven't gone so consistent after Oscar Pareja left? You know, you have to kind of look at it like this. And Martin was asked about this as well. When the season started, we saw how the season started for Orlando. They lost their first three games of the season. And then as soon as Oscar left, well, even when Oscar was there, they got pummeled, what, 5-0 against NYCFC, 6-0 against LAFC, 5-0 against Nashville.
Can't have it.
Those are some really bad beatings. And Martin Perelman basically kind of gave a little analogy. We had to stop the bleeding, he said, because, I mean, the results were not acceptable. So the first focus for him was to stop the bleeding. They basically had to restructure the starting 11. So to stop the bleeding, they had to do some movements around the back line. I think they finally found their ideal back line when it comes to their strong back line, because injuries also played a part, but not fully. But I mean, you can identify now the team's back line. It's Griffin Dorsey, Iago, Robin Jansen, who was basically out for the first 7 games of the regular season. And then you have the left back, which is still iffy. It's really Adrian Marin, the Spaniard left back. But there are times when David Broccolo, who's the team's other center back, plays that role. And he played that role mostly all of last season. He played it pretty well. So that's the back line. Where we've kind of seen the inconsistency when it comes to the midfield, it's Brian Ojeda, Edward Atuesta. But, you know, it's just them, because when it comes to now looking at the depth there, they've been banged up with injuries too. Jaron Jerbet is still coming back from an ACL. Wilder Cartagena is technically back already, but Martin mentioned that it's going to be a really slow transition back into the lineup, because, I mean, he suffered an Achilles injury. So they are trying to be very wary on how he gets back into action. So there's that. But now, you know, I'm not trying to get lost in the whole shuffle. The team's now in a restructuring mode. What Martin also kind of alluded to earlier this week was he didn't have that much time to prepare how this team was going to kind of take on the rest of the season. So he did mention how the World Cup break is going to be a positive for him as far as having this team prepared. And what I got out of that is, you know, I don't think they're going to hire a full-time head coach anytime soon. I could be wrong. I mean, things could go completely wrong in the next 3 games for Orlando City, and that's enough for Ricardo Moeda to kind of say, you know what, Martin, we're going to go for a full-time head coach elsewhere. that's still a possibility. But there's the possibility is that Martinez is probably going to hang out until the rest of the season, going to ride out how he does. And if at the end of this season, the team is not where it wants to be, then you can kind of explore that theory again. Is Martin going to be the right guy to right the ship in 2027 when you have already an Antoine Griezmann here? Or do you go look for a coach that can take on and right the ship for 2027, which is going to be another beast in itself, because obviously it's a sprint season and then the transition calendar. So that's where we are with this team. And it's still a lot of question marks. It's still, why hasn't it been, why hasn't this team been firing? But there's been slow starts to this team before. 2023, 2024 were slow starts. They were able to turn it around. 2025 was the other way around. They had a really good start, and then the second half of the season, things just kind of spiraled all the way out of the way after that Inter-Miami Leagues Cup semifinal exit. So it's really unpredictable. There's still a lot going on, a lot of questions. Griezmann's coming in July. You think there has to be some reinforcements as well in the roster, because there's certain players that I think that are not contributing to what they're expected of. So, but that's just really the story for Orlando City this season. It's been a long season, and it's not even half the season just yet. So
yeah, no, I'm right there with you, brother. There are some folks up here that are thinking the same thing. Our friend Mike Gramajo from Watch TV in Orlando dropping his purple knowledge on us here. So that, since you took a question away from me from my notes, so let me ask you this one. You've got Atlanta coming in this weekend, and then Atlanta is not leaving. They're not like finishing up there at Inter & Co, coming back up here to practice or anything. They're staying because there's this thing called the Open Cup that's going to be within a week's time and just a couple days after Saturday. So then, is your impression kind of like what a lot of folks are thinking involving Atlanta United, that you throw all your weight behind Open Cup, whatever happens on Saturday is Saturday? Is it first choice on Saturday, and then whoever can give me a pulse is going to be there for Open Cup because you're trying to get 3 points and work your way up the standings again, have a successful couple of days, have a successful week by the time you're done? What do you think is going to be looking like here with Open Cup, because you've played Philly, you've got Atlanta coming, then you're playing Atlanta in a different competition where if you win 3 games, you're in CONCACAF Champions League. Now it's Cup, sorry. So what do you think is going to be going on here?
Yeah, I think that's the gamble that the team is going to have to take, right? Because, you're at the point of the season now, the regular season, where you're going to have to start collecting points to go up the standings or at least finish off in a good standing before the World Cup break. So you look at this Atlanta game, rivalry game, Orlando's now in a position where they have to get the 3 points. You're at home. You haven't been that great at home. I mean, you pulled out a really ugly win against Philadelphia midweek, but it was an ugly win. So can we see another ugly win on Saturday? Maybe, but you're in a position where you have to kind of crank out a win. You have to. I mean, it's at home. And as I just mentioned just a few seconds ago, the team hasn't been that great at home. But then you look at Open Cup. You're in a quarterfinal now. You win, you advance to the semifinal. You get really close to a CONCACAF Champions Cup spot. Mm-hmm. So it really, really depends on what Martin is going to have to do. He did rotate the squad somewhat this during the game on against Philadelphia on Wednesday. But there's going to be more rotation. I would not be surprised to see if Orlando plays a weak squad on Saturday, but starts off with a weak squad on Saturday, and then puts it in he subs in his stronger players at some point during the game on Saturday, because I think all the marbles are going to be in that Open Cup game. It's a cup tournament. You win and you advance. I think you're going to have to put yourself in that position, and I think it puts you in an immediate position to get closer to regional play, which is something Orlando hasn't competed in since last season, I believe. So I think the gamble will be towards that. It really depends, because it's also you're playing Atlanta back to back. So you also have to figure out what kind of cards Atlanta's going to play. Is Atlanta really going to come out with a strong squad on Saturday? If not, are they going to come out with a strong squad on Tuesday? And that's the unpredictable part. And Atlanta hasn't had a good start to the season as well. So it really depends on how things are approached and all that. But from the Orlando side, they are now in a position where they're obligated to get a result on Saturday, and they're obligated to get a result on Tuesday. History, however, tells you Orlando has yet to win back to back games this season. So, is it going to happen for the first time? I don't know, but that's the unpredictable part right now where we're looking at.
All right, so starting 11, just for reference point, Maxime Crépeau in net. This was up against Philly. Back four, Brekalo, Robin Johnson. It was then it was Iago and Griffin Dorsey. Midfield was Thiago, Atuesta, Ojeda, and Angulo. And then up top it was Martin Ojeda, not to be confused with Brian Ojeda. And then you also had Justin Ellis. So it was a 4-4-2-ish until the whistle blew. But that was your starting 11. You sat initially Cartagena, Taifi, Reed Brown, Maguire, who came in and scored, Spicer, Pasalic, Marin, and Luis Otavio. So that was what you were looking at going into last night. And so are you kind of visualizing, okay, it might be this and we do the same kind of a thing? What are you visualizing in your head when it comes to Saturday?
I think Mexican's going to start on Saturday. That's just he's your de facto starting goalkeeper. And considering, as I mentioned, the team's in a position where they have to get 3 points, you're going to have to put somewhat of a strong lineup on Saturday. So, I mean, the way I envision it, Maxime, starting goalkeeper, I think Griffin Dorsey still gets the start on Saturday as your right back. Iago, I would not be surprised if David Brockelo is brought up in that game, and then you have Adrio Marin as your left back. So that's your back line right there. You look at midfield, you're going to have to go with Luis Otavio and perhaps Brian Ojeda. And then you can even add Tyree Spicer.
Your brain is trying to wrap your way around this.
It's tough because I'm trying to take into consideration that, this team was banged up with injuries. So I don't really think the next player I was going to say was Marko Pasalic, the Croatian international. Right. And he was out for the last six games of the season with a reported hamstring injury. Martin said earlier this week that he's in communication with the Croatian national team because he's likely going to go to the World Cup. So he came in the last 10 minutes of the game against Philadelphia. I don't think he's going to go the 90 minutes. I'm pretty sure they're going to be very, very cautious on how they play Marko Pasalic. I mean, he's your other designated player, but they want him fit to be at the World Cup. So I don't think he's going to have – I mean, if he starts on Saturday, which I'm starting to think he will, I don't think he gets the full 90. I don't think he gets the full 90. So your wings, Tyree Spicer, Marko Pasalic, and then I put Martin Ojeda as your 10 and then Duncan Maguire as your 9. Duncan Maguire didn't start on Wednesday, but I think he gets a start. Even though I love Justin Ellis, the homegrown that was playing part right back, part midfielder, part 10, part 9 against, and he did a tremendous job. He's only 19 years old, I think, 18 or 19 years old, and he did a really good job. But I don't think Justin Ellis is going to get the start for that. I think he'll be in the bench, but that's the way I envision things on Saturday. And then will there be some rotation on Tuesday? I think there will. But Martin Perelman is going to be tasked with putting a strong lineup as well. There's going to be some rotation at some point in that Saturday game. The goal is probably going to be to score early and then manage, but it's an unpredictable sport, my friend. And who knows what the soccer gods are going to have on Saturday, because, rivalry games are always great too, because it always adds that added oomph, if anything.
I love your word manage. Then obviously on the flip side of Open Cup, sir, we would like to catch up with you and kind of take these two games and take a peek at them as we head into yet another weekend. As always, it's great to see you. I know that you have to navigate things with the patrolling guard dog. And thanks for dropping by. As always, may everything go well with the police force that you have there at the Mike Gramajo Estates. And we'll catch up with you soon, my friend. Great to see you.
Appreciate it, my man. Have a good one.
as always, great to catch up with Mike. And he also knows that once Open Cup is over next week, as we're sitting here together, that we're going to kind of break down both these competitions and find out what it means for both the Purple Team and for Atlanta United going forward. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And I know that there is a great percentage of you that at some time in your day, specifically during the American football season, that you might be barking at your favorite team. They play soccer as well, and it's an opportunity for us to catch up with the head coach at UGA Soccer, Kandani McAlpine, and find out how the soccer team in August is going to be sharing that venue with the American Football Bulldogs as they try and set a record. Soccer at Sanford, UGA Soccer, and it's time to catch up with Kandani McAlpine to find out all the behind-the-scenes stuff that got it moving to get it to where it's August 20th. And get
sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your tickets as soon as they go on sale because a record is trying to be set. Here's our conversation with Kandani McAlpine. Talk to me, Coach.
Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, there we go.
There we go. All right.
The pride of Huntsville, Alabama. It is time to catch up with Kandani McAlpine. And this is a first. First off, welcome to the morning show, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And all the chaos that is attached. There is a reason that we have you here. Actually, there's a couple of reasons. I do want to ask about the spring and what you learned about yourself in the spring, which ended about a month ago.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about what's going to be slated for August. And it is a very cool thing that UGA Soccer is looking to do, and that is blow up attendance records when it comes to soccer. And I mean that in the most friendly sense possible, because it is James Madison and it is the University of Georgia in August between the hedges where the football is F-U-T-B-O-L. It is not F-O-O-T-B-A-L-L. I love this idea. Break this down and we'll dive into the weeds here on it, but break this down for us.
Well, we had a unique opportunity, right? There's so many things. There's the 30th anniversary of the gold medal game being played in Sanford Stadium. And most people don't remember the soccer history here at UGA and how big that was. For women's soccer specifically, it was massive. But for soccer in the U.S., it kind of continued and pushed into the 99ers, a little bit more into the 99ers. And so for us to be able to pay homage, that was one piece of it. It's a unique situation in that while on the West Coast with SC, we played in massive stadiums a few times, always against our rival UCLA and once against Florida, actually, in the Bank of Cal. And in our rivalry games versus UCLA, we averaged about 8,500 people. And in one game, we actually got to 11,000 plus. And so it was a unique way to kind of honor that. And the coach that we're playing against at James Madison was part of that UCLA staff. And so it was a fun way to kind of piece all these things together and really see if we can't elevate women's soccer again, but the collegiate side.
How far back a thought process was this? Was this just something that, you're having lunch over at the Varsity one afternoon and it's like, hey, why don't we do this? How far back are we talking here to come up with this notion?
Always thought about it. I'm like, man, it would be really fun for our players to play in there, right? And as we, look to potentially looking at the World Cup and thinking about teams coming in and potentially playing in there, it was like, wait a minute. There might be an opportunity here and with women's soccer starting a little bit earlier, football, the American kind, falling a little bit later. There's a nice little carve out for us to potentially play before they really get going and which is optimal for a game like this. So it probably has been about, 6-7 months really kind of cooking it up and thinking about the details. And then
you know, the ding went off, the bell went off when you started thinking about the Olympic piece of it. And you're like, wait a minute, if there's ever a time to do it, this is it. And so it all fell into place. Kirby was fantastic. Josh Brooks was fantastic. And so here we are.
When you have the to-do list, and I always like to ask coaches, administrators, front office folks, when it comes to either birthing a franchise or having an event like this, I know there's always a to-do list. Yeah. And I don't know where the to-do list is. I mean, it could be on, you know, one of these binders like we had when we were in high school.
Yep.
Notebooks. Could be a Gmail thing where I'd be sitting there going, how do I access my Gmail to look at the G Drive and all of these shared documents? Could be on that whiteboard behind your right shoulder, tucked away in the corner, where it could be a bunch of different lines and arrows and thoughts and things like that. This big 6-foot by 8-foot thing with different colors, red and black, and arrows and everything. Where is that to-do list currently to make this event sing? And what do you think the next thing that you can cross off that list is, just so you can sit there and say, okay, yeah, we're moving forward, we're moving forward, we're moving forward here?
Well, that list is in my bag. it travels with me because it's one of those things. But, you know, I'm really fortunate, right? It was one of those things where once you start to establish a game like this, an event like this, then it draws upon so many other people. And now we're starting to meet, you know, once or twice a month. And from here to the end, we're going to be meeting, trying to make this thing go. But the biggest part of this is exactly what I'm doing now, letting people know what's happening. You know, whether it's and seeing if we can't, you know, get U.S. soccer a little bit more tied in, see if we can't get Atlanta United as they add a new team to jump on board with this, to see if we can't get all of the local clubs, and I say local from Tennessee to Alabama to Georgia to Florida, all locked into this, to see if we can't get people to fly in for an event like this, because in this change of landscape world, this is an event that could actually get a lot of views and allow women's soccer in particular, our athletes, to be forward facing in a major way. And I think that's a wonderful thing in this day and age to be able to push out there.
I would imagine, though, that if somebody comes in from Tennessee, orange is not allowed to be worn in the building. Garnet is not allowed.
For an event like this, as long as they're cheering for the SEC, I'll let them wear whatever color they want.
Okay. Because, you know, as you and I both know, it just means more, or moss, or however you want to phrase it. But I mean, it is a great opportunity, and you as an ambassador for soccer, not just in the SEC, but obviously in your time out west as well, 3 time zones away, where you're looking at the growth of the sport. And you mentioned that moment with USC and UCLA that you had in the past. Go from that moment with USC and UCLA, the crosstown rivalry, to where you are right now here in the SEC. What has it been like for you over the last handful of years to see the game go from that moment there, you coming over back here to the Eastern time zone and the East Coast, and now being presented with this kind of an opportunity to just literally blow things up and sit there and say, hey, look, y'all can come into this tent and we can really raise the roof on this thing. What's it been like for you to see the growth from your time coming back from the West Coast?
Honestly, it's exciting. It's exciting. You know, we've got two sustainable leagues on the women's side that are doing really well. The opportunities for women to play not only here in the States, but to play abroad in multiple leagues, to see the growth of the youth game, to see more and more commercials, to see women's sports in general on the forefront, to go from there where you're competing with everything else that's going on in LA and to get those kind of crowds coming here where there's a little less of that, but a lot more tradition and fandom in and around the school, the SEC, the region in general. I'm hoping this region shows up in the way that we were able to get LA to show up for a game like this, because the sport, the game, the World Cup happening, all of these things kind of right in this window of time lends itself for a really exciting game, two really great teams. But women's soccer to be showcased in a way, especially collegiate women's soccer, while the pro game is growing and continue to climb, we need to still showcase these collegians, because for some of them, this will be their biggest stage. But for many of them, they'll go on and continue to play. And that's the exciting piece.
When you mentioned the collegiate game when it comes to women's soccer, mm-hmm. if you were king of women's collegiate soccer for a day, I give you the scepter, I give you the wand, I give you the robe, the crown, everything. If you had a day where you're wearing that outfit, and obviously the robe is going to be red and black, obviously.
Yes.
You got the crown, the scepter, the magic wand, the robe, the whole thing. How would you grow, and I'll put that word in quotes, and you can take it whatever direction you want.
Yeah.
How would you grow women's soccer if you were grand exalted poobah of women's soccer for a day? Could be the collegiate game, could be nationally, internationally. What would you do to increase awareness, to increase productivity, to increase activity, and get folks engaged in it who may not be either on the field or off? You're the one who's in charge for a day. What would you do to get the word out?
Well, there's a group of coaches out there, the IWSOC, that are working very, very hard to improve visibility, to improve viewership, to improve opportunities to be seen on linear television. I mean, as you watch the growth of some of the other collegiate sports, that is the next space for us to conquer. And we're going to start, you know, some preseason events similar to those in other sports, the basketballs, even in football, those tournaments, for lack of a better word, to see if we can't get more viewers in on the show. We're also looking to do some things where we have, the idea is being thrown around about having more teams come into our College Cup space, so we have a longer tournament where more people can see it, potentially even have multiple divisions there in one space, so that you just get more of a fandom. Our sport is a little different. You know, we do have supporters groups and we make noise and we yell and we scream in different ways. But there is a similarity, right? When you look at the MLS games and you look at what's happening with Atlanta United and the crowd that they get, I was laughing with somebody because I'm like, listen, they just took what the soccer model, the soccer model, yes, but they took the collegiate sport in the SEC model of tailgating and going and putting them in the building, right? It's the same, except it's for
the my friend. Amen to the.
It's for the adults, right? And so we need to continue to try to drive that kind of energy for this collegiate game and bring our supporters groups and get some little unorthodox things going. I would love to see that, because I tell you now, right, the competitive landscape in collegiate women's soccer is unbelievable right now. Yeah, you still have those, you know, teams that everybody's used to seeing at the end, but I'm telling you that there are a lot of coaches doing some really good work, and the level is elevating. And just like you're seeing the parity show up in what we consider the major sports, you're seeing it at the women's soccer level. You're seeing it all across, and whether we like it or not, you know, the landscape is a landscape, but it's helping us actually grow our game and create more parity. And I would want to continue to see those type events to get us more on linear TV. Television, to get more fans in the spaces, so that we could continue to put these women who work so very hard front and center for everybody to see the work that they do.
Well, and obviously, you know that you can knock on our door at any time, and we will
love that.
Those voices to help you out with that. And that's one of the, and you mentioned the Southeastern impact, and this is one of the things that I've been trying to impress upon folks over the last decade. Basically, if you go to, we'll use Atlanta United since that's our footprint right here. If you go to an Atlanta United game, they have taken that SEC college FOOTBALL experience and transferred it into what we're seeing with the FUTBOL. And so that's why you got all of these crowds, all this fever, all these groups, all this noise and excitement. It's just been moved over to soccer. And it has been, I know if you and I are sitting here, we're sitting down, we're breaking bread, you know, on broad. It's like, we figured this was going to be the case. Everyone else outside of the Southeast seems to be genuinely surprised that this is the response that is happening in the Southeastern United States. But the Southeast, to paraphrase, the Southeast got something to say. And you're seeing that transferred over. This doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise you.
I don't know.
It seems to surprise everybody else outside the Southeast.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I had an assistant one time when we were on the West Coast that, you know, was from another footprint. I won't even mention that footprint, but was from another footprint. But we were able to come down and play. I think we played Auburn and Georgia at Auburn. But I use some old friends and let them go into the football game. And all of a sudden, to see the tailgate experience, to go through that tailgate experience, to come into a game, to see the event that is just a game like that, all of a sudden it made sense why we talk about the way we go about our business down here, the way we have so much reverence for it and so much excitement about it. And it doesn't surprise me that you've seen it, you know, Charlotte, Nashville, here, like you're seeing it in this footprint in a major, major way. I don't think that's going to change. I think it gives our fan base something else to do in a different part of the year that is very similar to what they're used to doing. And I think that's phenomenal. And so I think it's now for me, it's how do I take our normal football crowd and bring it to football on the same weekend and have them extend the weekend and make it a little bit longer. And so an event like this playing in the stadium is one of those events to say, hey, we play big time. We play in the same season. Come see us, check us out, stay a little bit longer on the weekend, extend this experience that you're having, and come watch these women do their thing.
And this is not going to be another situation where the hedges are removed and taken someplace. They're staying.
Hedges are staying. The field will be a little smaller, but it is what it is for an experience like this. You know, it is probably not optimal for the way we like to play. But at the same time, one thing I can take from an experience during COVID in LA, we played in the Coliseum. It was just where we had to play because that was what it was. The field was smaller and tighter. We played some great games. We had a great experience. We had a good time. And so I expect this to be no different. This is exactly what you know, we're looking for. We just now need the people in the building to create the overall experience. And to be fair, we would like to honor those women that started it 30 years ago. I mean, to set the record is one thing, but to really show them the honor and show them how far the game has come here in Athens, here in the state of Georgia. We've got U.S. soccer here. We've got Atlanta United here. We've got our club here. We've got so many other smaller schools in the state of Georgia that are playing some great, great soccer. So for me, that is that is the hope. That is the experience that we're looking for.
Thursday, August 26th, 30, Dooley Field, Sanford Stadium. James Madison comes in to take on the University of Georgia. And once again, admission free for all spectators with ticket claims beginning on Thursday, July 30. I know you turn into a pumpkin because I know that you're a very, very busy day. But I wanted to ask about your takeaways from the spring schedule ended about a month ago. And you had various levels of competition going up against UGA. What are some of the things that you're taking away from the spring schedule that you're working on going forward?
Biggest takeaway, I'm glad we got all of our young people in the building in the spring. we needed to grow a little bit. I think we are exactly where we thought we would be when coming into Georgia. We wanted to change the reputation of Georgia soccer, right? We wanted to change that. I think we were able to do that in the first few years, but we did it through the portal. We did it by bringing in 1 and 2 year eligibility left players and helping push it forward. We brought a couple of players that were familiar with us and we helped move the needle. We have since this freshman class from 2025 started to shift it. And we want to build where we have some players in the building for longer periods of time that can really grow the culture and whatnot. And so we last year was a great first step, and now we expect to take another jump. We've got some really talented women from all over the country, from a couple other countries, and I like where we are. But we needed to have a couple of mistakes.
Lemonade, fresh squeeze lemonade. Lemonade. Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Get some people out there and get through the first jitters of playing their first collegiate game, and that's what this spring was. And now our starting point is a little bit further down the road. This will also be the first summer that we get access in mid-July, which is fantastic. Now we can have a true build into our season, which historically we haven't had. We'd had 2 weeks, ready, set, go, play. Now we've got a full month to kind of get them acclimated and prepared for the rigors. And we can also be a little bit more prepared. So I'm excited for where we are. I'm excited for our team. And I think our schedule is hard as always, mm-hmm. and lends itself for us to have a chance to really grow ourselves and be prepared for the SEC run.
Yep. And the state championships on the high school level, they start today. So you could be probably having folks sitting in front of monitors, staring at a lot of folks at Coney County and Jefferson. You got wired. Yep. I mean, that's a big one today to start things off. I know that you've got folks that can do that for you. You now officially have been welcomed into the idea of the morning show here. So you now know where the garage door opener is.
Yep.
You know where the key is under the mat. So if there is anything, and I mean anything, that you want to talk about, you know, east, west, north, south, you know, around the corner, come in at any time. Just let us know. Shoot me a note. Sitting there, yo, Nelson, I need to come in. I need to get something off my chest. Literally, that's all you got to do. And I know you got to tell Jake Stanley first and foremost. Hey, Jake, I'm going to go on the morning show here. I can't thank you enough for doing this. And we will continue to revisit as we get closer to soccer at Sanford. And it's going to be really cool. The FUTBOL Between the Hedges in August. Coach, I can't thank you for dropping by enough. It's been fantastic to see you. Don't be a stranger. We'll catch up soon, my friend.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure. Go Dogs.
Well, yes, and the woofing that is appropriate that goes with it. It's Kadani McAlpine. He's the head coach at the University of Georgia, and he has survived the morning show, people. And we will keep you up to date with everything going on attached to soccer in Sanford going forward as we get closer to August the 20th here in soccer season. This is the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Third story, very cool. We found out about the Field of Dreams Academy and their work in 20-plus years here based in the Atlanta area, and how they've gotten to help out thousands of individuals to go from students to student athletes to professional athletes and all walks of life, but they've been impacted by the Field of Dreams Academy. Terry Johnson, founder, executive director, and CEO, joined SDHAM, and we found out what the next stages might entail in their over 20-year history because they are now a part of the Feeble Global Citizen Education Fund in a grant that was given by FIFA. So here's our conversation with Terry Johnson, finding out about Field of Dreams Academy and how FIFA looks to help them out down the line. It is 10:45, and it is this one was really cool. When this came across our bow, we were like, yeah, let's go ahead and I want to find out about this. So we go and catch up with the CEO of the Field of Dreams Academy, Terry Johnson, find out what is going on at FOD. Terry, good to see you, my friend. Thanks for crashing the show here on a very, very busy day for you and a very, very busy Friday in general.
Well, good morning, John. First of all, thank you for having me, and I'm excited to join you guys, and let's get into it.
All right. Well, and what I wanted to do was turn this into, yes, I wanted to talk about the news about the cool stuff that is happening with FIFA, but what I also wanted to do is educate our audience about the Field of Dreams Academy, and not a lot of folks know about it. And I didn't know that there was another vowel added into the program because I'm used to seeing STEM schools, but you're a STEAM school. And I was like, okay, I'm not used to seeing that A in there. For those that may not know about the Field of Dreams Academy, break it down as to where it is in the community and what you're trying to accomplish with Field of Dreams Academy.
Thank you so much. So the Field of Dreams Academy, we are an out-of-school enrichment program. So we're connected with Atlanta Public School System, DeKalb County Schools, Clayton County, and Fulton County, where we provide after-school and out-of-school enrichment programs that deal in academics, athletics, and leadership development. So for us, our feeder is we deal in STEAM, you're absolutely correct, around the traditional science, technology, engineering, robotic programs from first robotics to auto racing with soapbox derby, to mechanical bots, to gaming and coding, to traditional science, you know, research science, physical science, from physics to chemistry. We provide those enrichment programs to those schools and help elevate to the next level. So for their advanced programming, your AP class or your academy programs that are within those districts, we're the supplement provider for them. And we've been doing that for 21 years. On top of that, we offer athletic programming. So for us, our athletic programming focuses on teaching the fundamentals of the game, but elevating and putting those student athletes in a position to go to the next level. Our core sports are soccer, baseball, softball, volleyball, lacrosse. I mentioned to you auto racing, and people go auto racing. So again, the soapbox derby building, that's a STEM piece to go-karting. Are our core items. So imagine now a parent saying, I want my son and daughter to understand the game of lacrosse. We do that, but we go, it is a STEM-based sports. Let's talk about the science behind what it takes to participate and to be an elite lacrosse athlete. The same for science and baseball. So for us, what we do is in the metro Atlanta area, we're based out of the west side of Atlanta, and near our great partner, Georgia Tech, and also Morehouse College. We have access to their campus. So we do also a part of our leadership where we tell our students, imagine yourself going to college. You're on this college campus. Imagine going to be on Georgia Tech's campus, and you're in the classroom, and you're learning STEM education. But now you also have access to the athletic field where we do our soccer program. The same thing at Morehouse College in Clark, Atlanta, other partners. So for us, it really is about the exposure of elevating those young athletes and students that we work with, understanding the importance of education and athletics, and marrying it to them becoming leaders in their community. We've been doing that for about 21 years now.
From the first day that you walked in the door, can you think off the top of your head, or just a round number, of how many young people have come in that you've influenced and helped them with their way and guided them to whatever their path is coming out of Field of Dreams? Do you have any kind of numbers or ideas how many folks you've touched?
Yeah. So when we were celebrating our 20-year anniversary last year, we pulled all the research data and looked at it. We've touched over 10,000 youth in our programming in that time frame. And the story behind it, I'll share quickly, is this was born out of me being a father of four. So I'm also the founder of the organization. So I was married, four boys, heavily into athletics. And I was telling my wife at the time, you know what? I want to do something bigger than just be a coach, because I realized I have a privilege in being in these young men and young women's lives. And I don't want to just be one who wrote a check supporting organizations. I want a big impact. So we started the Field of Dreams Academy. So it was really about taking sports and then education because of our background. And that's how we kind of build the organization over the years. So for us, we're really excited. And, you know, I've got the stories, and we can get into it, of the number of professional athletes that have come through our program that are making their impact today, but also the number of young men and women who are principals, who are, you know, entrepreneurs, who are lawyers and doctors who come through our program because of what we offer. So we're really excited about not only what the Global Citizen and FIBA organization said, hey, you're doing great impact in the community. We want to support you, but it's going to allow us to even elevate our programs even more.
All right. Let me get into the FIFA element of this, the FIFA Global Citizen Education Fund. And you're a part of the inaugural class, however you wish to phrase it. you're the school is open and you're part of that first graduating class that's there. How did all of this come to be? Who was scanning and sat there and was like, oh, let's, you know, go there. How did this come to pass?
Great question. So for us, our program director, Miss Eli, and she's out of the office today. I would have had to join us, but you know, she was doing the research on grant opportunities, and based on what we were doing in the community, it came across through our national grant database that we have that they were looking to do this grant program, but there was a very specific profile that they were looking for as far as nonprofits that they wanted to engage. And when she did the checklist, she says, hey, we qualify. We meet this and we really should go after this. So we came together collectively, my program director, my academic counselors, some of my parents who've been with us, and says, okay, how can we really make sure we tell our story, we provide the correct documentations, and then make sure that they see what we're doing and we can take advantage of this enormous opportunity that's before us. So that's how we did it. You know, so strategically it was a team. We went through it. We kept going back and forth, and we kept saying, you know what? As we kept pulling the data out that we pulled from that they were asking for our programming, it was like, this makes sense. This is a huge opportunity for us. So we got even more excited as we got through the process.
Montemeco Eli, the program director, is who Terry is referencing in all of this. So what does it, I guess, what were the parameters going in? What were the guidelines? It's like, okay, FIFA said, okay, if you apply for this grant, that means that you have to apply it to A, B, C, D, E. Or did they just sit there and say, okay, here, you're a part of the grant program. We've got a loose structure. As long as you fit inside that loose structure with the grant, then everything's cool. What did they allow you to chase in the application process, and how does that help you now that you're on the other side?
So what they really were looking at, two things that really stood out. Mm-hmm. Understand, tell us what you're doing with the power of sport, and then also how are you using sport to elevate education among the youth? Show us what milestones and achievements that you've accomplished, but more important, what do you see moving forward within the next 3 to 5 years and how we can have an impact? So for us, we're built around the power of sport. I mentioned to you that for us, we deal in academic, athletic, and you know, leadership enrichment, but they all are intertwined. So for us, it's like the power of sport. We've always used sport as our conduit. Every parent thinks their child is that next superstar, you know? So we go, okay, that's great. And we have programming based on our relationships with the U.S. Soccer Foundation, U.S. Lacrosse, those organizations that support what we're doing. So we understand the importance of the power of sports, Lourdes USA, and that we get that. But then on the education side, it was like understanding where education is, not only in your community, but from a global perspective. And we look at STEAM and the way that we present our STEAM programming from a global perspective. You know, we all talk about the power of AI and how it's manipulating today. Understanding technology from a coding standpoint, robotics are in manufacturing. So for us, what we were doing aligned specifically what they're looking for. So it was like, hey, how you use the power of sport and how are you elevating education? And that, can it have an impact more than just in your community, but from a regional and a global perspective? And we answered that with an astounding yes. And that's how we presented ourselves to the organization.
And for those that may not know the acronym, when it comes to, you'll see STEM programs, and with Field of Dreams, it's a STEAM program. It's science, technology, engineering, arts,
yes,
and mathematics. And so the A was something that I haven't seen with academies and such. I'm used to STEM schools and STEM programs. I had never seen a STEAM program and a STEAM school. Just how did the A turn STEM into STEAM? How did that come to pass?
So great question. So what we found was while parents were gravitating to the STEAM that we were doing, the STEM that we were doing, it was not every kid wanted to be in the sport. They wanted to be parts of it. But then we start finding a number of students who were artists. And when I use the word artists, not only from a visual or media piece where we were doing in photography and videography, but also the medias of pain and all that, but also public speaking and music. So for us, it was like, if we're going to have a greater impact, we've got to add the arts, because every kid does not want the athletics, and every kid may not be successful in the science and the math. But if we can show them that they are components that are incorporated from the art perspective, then we still have that aha moment. And that's about how we incorporate it, and that's how we engage our students.
Yeah, you mentioned the next superstar, and superstar can mean a bunch of different things. It can mean that professional athlete that has looped back, that has, you know, remembered their time with you at Field of Dreams, and now they loop back and they continue to be a part of your orbit there. You can be a superstar in business. You can be a superstar in art. You can be a superstar in technology, engineering, all of these different things. And so that term superstar, while we associate it with sports, it goes across all of those strata with what you're doing there at Field of Dreams. What's it like when you have someone go through the program and then they turn into a young adult, a young professional, and are successful, however you want to use that word, and then they come back and visit? What's it like to have them come back and rub off on successive classes there at Field of Dreams?
I turn into a big teddy bear, you know, and I say that and I get full as we're sharing now, John. I'll give you two quick stories and you can understand why. So Currently on my board is a young man. His name is Bobby Kennedy. Bobby is a financial analyst with Invesco. He started in our baseball program at the age of 11. Bobby talked to me about wanting to play baseball at the next level. And his aspirations was playing collegiate and maybe pro. And he played with my oldest son. So they played baseball through our program. Bobby was successful. He went on to play in high school, had a great high school career. He transferred over to Morehouse College, the school I also graduated from. And I had a little influence there. So you'll see where I'm building on it. And upon his graduation, he would always come back and help with the baseball program as a coach for some of our clinics. But upon graduation, day one, he says, "Coach Terry, no matter how old I get or they get, or I'm still Coach Terry. Coach Terry, I want to be a part of Field of Dreams. You had such a great influence on me." And I was like, "Okay, great." So he came in and he says, "I'm not working right now, just graduated." He became an intern. So he interned for us, and it happened right before COVID hit. So perfect timing. He worked for us about 2 years, and he was very instrumental in us understanding that bridge you talk about of going through the program and coming back. Did a great job of reconnecting even more what we call that younger generation. So impressed that our board, when he did get a job, we sent him off. We were very happy based on one of our parents who worked at Invesco, made that connection. Our board was so impressed with the work that he done. He was our first young board of directors. So he's been now on the board now for 2 years. And his story was, this organization helped me become a better person. Not only just an athlete, but a better person. So I get full about that story of, now I've got this young man who's going through it. Now he sits on our board. So he believes in the mission and vision because he lived it. I've got another young man. His name is Daniel Price. Daniel is a teacher, elementary school teacher, teaches science and math. He's about 6'3", very towering, but he's a big old teddy bear also. So he started their baseball program 2 years ago, and he was having a hard time. He called me one day, same thing. He says, "Coach, I need you." I said, "What's going on?" I said, "What's going on with the science program? We just built a lab." He said, No, "I need you on my athletic side." "Yeah, you helped me with my science programs. We're great. I'm doing baseball, and I can't do it with these young kids." I was like, "I'm there." So I was his assistant coach. So, you know, and so I'm sitting there, and everything, the commands of teaching, the leadership piece, he's replicating it word by word. It's almost like a mirror. And I'm doing one of the games, and one of the kids, the little fourth grader, because they're third, this is what we call the rookie league, they're like, "Coach Terry, why are you crying?" I'm going, "Because that's me right there talking to you guys." So, you know, having a kid that says, "I want you to be a part of something, you know, on the educational side." So I've got this person in corporate America who's doing well, that's in our leadership. Another one that's in education, that's having an influence of the next generation, specifically in science when we talk about that. And then also using athletics. Those are the stories that I have, you know, for outside of professional athletes. I'll share with you the names of Lawrence Butler, who's with the Oakland A's, Chandler Simpson, who plays with the Tampa Rays, Mark Church is with the Texas Rangers. All those young men who are Major League Baseball players played in our organization. So the impact, yeah, we talk about it, and people like that story, but I really love the piece of those young men and women who are making a difference in the community.
And thank you for saying Oakland, the Oakland A's, because
I know he goes, "Coach, we're Las Vegas." I said, "I grew up as Oakland, and until you move into the new facility, you're still the."
I'm down with that. I'm right there with you. Terry Johnson, Executive Director, Founder, CEO of something really, really cool that came across our bow that we couldn't resist talking to him about at the Field of Dreams Academy. So now that you are part of this first graduating class of the FIFA Global Citizen Education Fund, I know that you have things that you want to accomplish over the next 3 to 5 years. How will this connection with FIFA help in that? I know, obviously, yes, you have the normal grant process that is this churning beast that is 24/7, 365 on a year-to-year basis. But now with FIFA attached, how will the Global Citizen Education Fund help you out going forward?
That's a great question. And my response is, I think it gives us credibility. You would think 20 years of providing programming service would do it. But just think about the name of FIFA and their impact globally, what the Global Citizens organization does. Those two together and what they've created, it allows us to open up doors that might have been closed to us. You know, and to like today, this conversation with you is what we find an honor, because we can tell our story even more, and it gets us on another platform where people go, huh, that's interesting. Wow, I would love for my son or daughter to be a part of it, or grantor saying, you know what, I see their vision, I understand it, we want to support them. So for us, it opens up doors that were not available to us before or might have been closed. It says, wait a minute, you might not have thought of the value, but they support us. Now we can have a greater impact in our, you know, what we're doing in our community. We can also share that where it's a ripple effect. You know, I'm an old guy. I always remember the days of hanging out with my friends in the summers and we're throwing rocks in the pond, you know, who can make the biggest ripple effect. Mm-hmm. So for us, this is a ripple effect that they're dropping us and says, we believe in them. Now look what we're able to do long term. So that's what we look for and why we're so excited about what they believe in us and giving us this opportunity to be a part of this phenomenal program.
And at the same time, making sure that when you take that rock and you go across the pond with it, that you've got the angle right, so you're not just making that one ripple. you're hitting all the different zones
as you figure
out how far that stone can go when it comes to throwing it across the pond. All right, if you would please, mm-hmm. let everybody know how they can find out more information about the Academy, about what you're doing, all of the things. Let everybody know. How do they do it?
Thank you. So our website is fieldofdreamsacademy.org. Our office number is area code 404-583-4041 directly. My name is Terry Johnson. My email address is terry.johnson@fieldofdreams.org. Our social media is Field of Dreams ACA, so Field of Dreams and then ACA, an abbreviation for Academy. We're on IG, also on X and Facebook. We put out our programming, what we do monthly and quarterly. John, 90% of our program is free of charge also. I want to mention that. So when you talk about the investment, what we ask our families and our kids, your investment of time and commitment. So what this grant would also allow us to do is to provide that access to those families even more. So a lot of times they think, well, I don't have the financial resources. This allows us to provide our programming free of charge. So when we talk about that, again, that rock across the pond, you can understand what I'm saying, what the ripple effect is even greater. So we're truly grateful for their support and their belief in what we're doing.
Educate, expose, and endow opportunities to youth from underrepresented communities here based in the Atlanta area. Terry, I can't thank you enough for wrapping up our full week of everything here on the morning show and letting everybody know about this. Congratulations on the contact with FIFA and being a part of their first graduating class when it comes to the Global Citizen Education Fund. Congratulations, my friend, and we will catch up with you soon. Don't be a stranger. Keep us posted on everything you're doing over there.
I will do. And again, it's been a pleasure meeting you and having this conversation today. And thank you. And thank you to your audience for listening. You have a great day. Okay.
Be good, sir. That's Terry Johnson. And that was good. That was really cool. Great to find out about the Field of Dreams Academy from Terry Johnson and find out what's next for them now that they have been part of the inaugural graduating class of the FIFA Global Citizen Education Fund. And really cool there at Field of Dreams, a Field of Dream INC on the 280 character app. And you heard Terry give you the website and all the other information that's there attached to Field of Dreams Academy and their grant from FIFA. That is another go round of the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. As always, thanks for dropping by as you always do. Like, friend, follow, be a part of the conversation at Soccer Down Here on all of your social media channels. And we will be continuing to crank out everything because next week starts the World Cup break. And we get to find out about the 48 teams that are going to be heading to this hemisphere and what it's going to be like as they chase after the World Championship. That is another go-round of SDHAM for everybody here at SDH. For Jason, for Jarrett, for Nick, for Maddie, for Vanessa, for Drew, and for Sophia. I'm just John. Thanks for dropping by. The best of SDHAM. Mucha Plata. Y'all play it safe. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.